All right, we'll go into the sermon. It's time again to go through the Passover service. And as we do every year, we look at the symbols and we know that what those symbols mean to us, especially those who have made that commitment, made that covenant with God in their baptism, those symbols of the bread and the wine and what those mean and what it means to us. And we understand that the bread and understand why the bread has to be unleavened. But we also understand the meaning of the wine and what it symbolizes as the blood of Jesus Christ. Surprisingly, we're not the only ones in the world who keep the Passover, although we keep it much differently than other people do. I was discussing that with a few individuals this morning about how differently we keep it and how the world doesn't keep it in the same way or with the same understanding as what we have. I want to read from an article. This is on eHow, Holidays and Celebrations, How to Celebrate Passover. And we'll see if you do it the same way that they're suggesting here, how to celebrate Passover. It says, Passover, or Pesach in Hebrew, commemorates the Jews' exodus from Egypt more than 3,000 years ago, and it ranks to be one of the most important and beloved of all Jewish holidays. And it is definitely one of the most elaborate domestic rituals. Passover begins on the 15th day of the Hebrew month of Nisan and lasts for 7 or 8 days. 7 or 8 days. It says, step number one, clean your house thoroughly before Passover begins. That's something probably starting now as we are only weeks away. Step number two, remove all traces of prohibited food called shametz. Any leavened products, including grains, breads, cereals, vinegar, cornstarch, or alcohol. They go into a much deeper, what they consider to be leavening agents. But vinegar, cornstarch, and even alcohol. Step number three, brush the last crumbs into a disposal bag with a feather or palm branch, saying, and as you do this, you're supposed to say this. You're supposed to say, all leaven that I have not seen or removed or that I don't know about is hereby null and void and ownerless as the dust of the earth, and then burn the shametz. Wouldn't that be nice? I think a lot of people would go, I've cleaned enough. Anything I don't see is not real, is not mine. Hereby null and void and ownerless. Step number four, it says, conduct a final search for shametz and store it in a remote, sealed-off part of the house. So if you find any after this, after you've already declared it done, and you find it, well, you just put it in a sealed bag or sealed place in an off in a part of the house. Or it says, sell the shametz to a non-Jewish friend and redeem it after Passover. So just give all your leavening to friends. I've heard of individuals over the year putting it in a bag and hanging it over the fence so it's on their neighbor's side, and then they would pull it back over on their side when the days of unleavened bread are over. That's why it's not on their property. But here they said you can sell it to a friend and redeem it after the Passover. So, again, we already understand and we can see a little bit why the meaning of the Passover and the knowledge of why we keep it is much different. There's already in the preparations for it are much different. Step number five, fast on the day before Passover if you are the firstborn male in your family. This custom commemorates the fact that firstborn Jewish males in Egypt were not killed during the final plague. Step number six, eat no shametz at any time during the 7 days or 7 or 8 days. And then step number seven, refrain from all work on the first and last days of Passover. You can work on the intermediate days. And step number eight, hold a Seder, which many of you are probably familiar with the Seder meal. Hold a Seder on the first night of Passover or attend someone else's. Those are what the world considers and a compilation of how to keep the Passover. I like the way we keep it. It's much different than what is kept there. The way we keep it is biblical. You can look at God's word and show that we are keeping it properly. Makes sense. But it also has meaning in the way we keep the Passover service. There are only a few religions who actually keep the Passover, or is what some call the Lord's Supper, and even fewer who keep it in the way that Christ instituted it. There's an important part of the service that is left out of many of those who do keep the Passover, and that is the foot washing. The bread and wine are vital parts of the Passover service, something that cannot be neglected, but it's not all that we are to keep on that particular evening. Some who actually do keep the foot washing have various rules. Of course, you would almost expect that if there's traditions and if somebody does keep the foot washing, here are their various rules. The way the feet are washed. It says one should at least touch the feet. Now, if you're going to do a foot washing, I don't think you would just kind of splash the water on there and say, okay, you're good to go. No, they say they made a rule and said you have to actually touch the feet. That's a good rule if you're going to do a foot washing. But here are a couple that says that they listed are actually good reminders. And over the years, especially to those who are newly baptized, if they're going to be keeping their first Passover, to understand some of these rules. Instruct them to come to services with clean feet and in clean footwear. I've been in parts of the country where maybe their feet were clean, but they're wearing cowboy boots with mud on them. And you know, like, could have kicked those off before you brought it in, but wear clean shoes and have clean feet. Remind women not to wear stockings or pantyhose. Now, that has been a mistake of some. When they go the first time to foot washing, they don't know what to expect, and they get there and they're like, oh, yeah, this isn't going to work, and have to take extra time to be able to make that happen. Sometimes we hear stories of individuals that have wore high lace-up boots, and you have to sit there and work all the laces out of these boots, or dress shoes or cowboy boots that are too tight, and it's hard to get those off for individuals. We want to make sure that we make it easy or easier to do. I always try to wear loose-fitting socks so it's easy to slip off, because some dress socks for men are tight and you're trying to work those off or get them back on, especially when your feet are wet. You get those feet dried off, but they're still moist, and to pull a dress sock on is tough. So I try to wear the most loose-fitting pair of dress socks I have for that particular evening. The way we keep the foot washing is not just a ritual and not just something that we've developed over the years or something we added to the Passover service. There's a purpose for it. We need to wash the feet of anyone we're with as if we were washing the feet of Jesus Christ. When we go through today and look at the foot washing, and we look at what was the example that was given to us, we need to make sure we're not just doing it as a ritual, but we understand the purpose behind it. Why did Christ institute the foot washing service as a part of the New Testament Passover? And why didn't he just teach lessons of humility or lessons of foot washing at another time? Because it ties in with this Passover service. Why did he wash the disciples' feet before he gave the new symbols? Instead of saying, here's my new symbols and I'm going to add this in as one of the new symbols, he washed their feet before the bread and the wine. Again, it's not just something we do as a symbol. It is an attitude that we're supposed to develop. And it's one, as we examine ourselves before the Passover, we want to be in that attitude. It's not just something, okay, I need to do this at the Passover, or have this attitude at the Passover for the foot washing service. It's an attitude that we should have all the time. And as we examine ourselves, we should be looking at that particular part of our life. Do we have it in our lives now? Excuse me. So there's something we are to be and something we're to develop before we keep the Passover, before we take the bread and the wine. And Christ gave us that example of an attitude we're supposed to have. Let's go to Philippians chapter 2 and verse 5. Philippians chapter 2 and verse 5. He says, let this mind be in you, which was also in Jesus Christ, who being in the form of God, thought it not robbery to be equal with God. Verse 7, but made himself of no reputation. He humbled himself and took upon him the form of a servant. The word servant there is the word doulos, means a slave or a bond servant. He took on the form of a slave and was made in the likeness of men. And being found in the fashion of men, he humbled himself. And he became obedient unto death, even the death of the cross. So it says he humbled himself. Strong's exhaustive concordance on the Greek on this word, humbled, means to depress, to humiliate, to abase, to bring low, or to humble. So he made himself in the fashion of man, or being made in the fashion of man, he humbled himself. He did these things to fulfill a purpose. But he also says, this is an example of us, we're supposed to have that same mind. He set an example to follow his steps, to develop the opposite of the leaven of pride, the opposite of an attitude of exalting oneself, but rather to be humbled. So what is it that's required then? What is it that God is looking for in the Passover service and something that we should be having as a part of our character? Micah chapter 6 and verse 6. Micah chapter 6 and verse 6. I'm going to read from the King James Version. It says, "Wherewith shall I come before the Lord and bow myself before the high God? Shall I come before him with burnt offerings, with calves of a year old? Will the Lord be pleased with 1,000 rams or 10,000 rivers of oil? Shall I give my firstborn for my transgression and the fruit of my body for the sin of my soul?" Should I go back to all the physical things that Israel was taught? Do I do it in a physical example and show God by physical things and by performing these rituals how I am before him? He says in verse 8, "He has showed you, O man, what is good and what the Lord requires of you, but to do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God." He says to walk humbly, to do justly, love mercy, and walk humbly. These are things that God requires of us. And as we approach the Passover, we can approach it and ask ourselves, are we approaching it in humility, and are we walking humbly? David says in Psalm 51, he said, "You do not desire sacrifice, or else I would give it to you. You do not delight in burnt offerings. The sacrifices of God are a broken spirit and a broken and contrite heart, O God, you will not despise." He said, it's a broken spirit and a broken and contrite heart. Broken here means to crush or destroy. That the old man, the old way of thinking, the spirit of pride, which is natural to man, to be broken or crushed. And contrite means to collapse or to break. And God says the sacrifices of God are a crushed spirit, not a haughty spirit, not one of pride, but one that is broken and collapsed. It's putting to death the old way, that former way of thinking, but it is totally depending on God and learning to humble ourselves. I want to look at another lesson that we can learn or focus on, two particular lessons. Humility is the first. Matthew chapter 20. Matthew chapter 20 and verse 25. The disciples were arguing among themselves who was going to be chief. They thought, well, if somebody's going to be important, we got to talk amongst ourselves who's going to be head honcho. Who's going to be in charge here? We'll look at what Christ told them. The lessons of humility go right along with another important character trait. We've talked about humility a little bit. Here's the other trait, and then we'll look at both. Matthew 20, verse 25. "But Jesus called them and said to them, 'You know that the princes of the Gentiles exercise dominion over them, and they that are great exercise authority upon them.'" Strong's original says, "The rulers of all the nations lord it over them." Not in the direction that they should, but they lord it over them, or they exercise authority upon them. They're oppressive. Verse 26, "But it shall not be so among you, but whoever will be great among you, let him be your minister, your diakonos, and it means servant. And in other translations, you'll see if you have a different translation, may even have the word servant. Let him be your servant. This word, diokonos, is very similar to the word for deacon, diokoneo. It means to be an attendant, to wait upon, to serve, or to minister. As deacons would serve in a position, or they attended to the needs of the church. Verse 27, whoever will be chief among you, let him be your servant. Or as others might have, let him be your slave, because it is that word, doulos, or slave. So he said, if you want to be chief, if you're striving to be chief, you want to be the one in charge, start serving. Start helping other individuals, because in the heart of things, that is where a leader emerges. So he says, serve or be a slave. Even as the Son of Man came not to be ministered to, not to be served, but to minister or to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. He lived a way of life that was to be imitated. He said we're to follow that example. And he humbled himself, but he also not just humbled himself, but he came and he said, I'm not here to be served. I'm not coming here so you can serve me and just do all these things for me. He said, I'm coming here to serve. I'm coming here to set an example because you're needed to serve. And he called us for that very purpose. We know that we're going to be doing that for thousands of years, is serving other individuals. But he called us to live a way of life that's to be imitated. At the foot washing, he set an example of humility and service. And through the foot washing process, that's something we need to be focusing on and thinking about. But even before we get there, not just getting to service and going, okay, foot washing, what was it I was supposed to remember? Or how can I focus on humility? For some, it's a very humiliating thing to bow down and to wash the feet of another individual. And some are nervous and have a hard time somebody else washing their feet. Some have said, well, I have no problem washing somebody's feet. I just don't want them washing my feet. It is humbling both ways. And sometimes, for one, it may be more humbling to let somebody else wash your feet. Some people like to serve, but when it's their time to be served, they find it difficult to do. And that's a part of humility. So here they were to be humbling themselves and learning to serve, learning to develop these two particular traits. So we see the lessons of humility and service. And again, it was something that they were to learn. So at the foot washing, he developed these things, and this is something we do on an annual basis. And hopefully it's not something that we just gloss over, or hopefully we don't just look at it as, well, this is part of the service, but it's not as important as the bread and the wine. He added this, and he said this was something we're to do. We're to think about it. Now, as he added this particular service, we also see that it was something that when he washed the feet of the disciples, he also washed the feet of the one who was going to betray him. And it's something that when we know that he was going to be betrayed by Judas in a very short time, that had to be humbling as well. He's washing the feet of one who was going to openly betray him. Let's go to John chapter 13. John chapter 13 and verse 4. We will be reading these passages at the Passover service. John chapter 13 and verse 4, he says, he rose from supper and he laid aside his garments and he took a towel and girded himself. Barnes notes says he laid aside his garments, his outer garment. This was a mantle or a robe which is said to be without a seam. It's kind of wraps around an individual. And it's customary to lay this aside when an individual worked or when they ran or in the heat of the summer. But he took this outer garment and he laid it aside. And he took a towel and girded himself. And this was a symbol of a slave, one who would gird himself with a towel. Verse 5, after he had poured the water into a basin, he began to wash the disciples' feet and to wash them with the towel, or to wipe them with the towel, rather, with which he was girded. So he washed their feet, began to wash the disciples' feet. Now here you had individuals who were all trying to decide who's going to be chief, who's going to be in charge, and then to have Jesus Christ begin to wash their feet. That had to be humbling on both sides, and we will see that it was. So he says he came to Simon Peter, and Peter said to him, "Lord, do you wash my feet?" He said, "You know, you shouldn't be doing this. You're above all of this. You're greater than this. Are you going to wash my feet?" Jesus said to him, "What I do, you do not know, but you shall know after this," or hereafter. He said, you're going to know why I'm doing this and why I'm instituting this as part of the service. Peter said to him, "You shall never wash my feet." Peter had a way of saying things that got him into trouble multiple times until he gets to the point of learning to not make so bold statements very quickly. "Lord, I would never deny you." Denied him three times. "Lord, you will never wash my feet." And very quickly we see that he changes his attitude. So again, he says, Peter said to him, "You shall never wash my feet." And he said, "If I wash you not, you have no part with me." Wow, that's kind of putting him in his place very quickly. He said, "If I don't wash your feet, we don't have a part together." Now in the foot washing, it's part of the ceremony that we keep as the Passover service, and it is an important part of it. He said, "If I don't wash your feet, you don't have any part with me." And again, it's probably a shock to Peter and those around. He was very serious about what he was adding to this particular service. And yet many who keep Passover don't even keep the foot washing. His washing of their feet, he says, makes us a part of him. And how? Well, it's necessary humility on both parts to have our feet washed, and it was for them to have their feet washed by Jesus Christ. Peter quickly had a change of mind. Verse 9, he says, "Lord, not my feet only, but my hands and my head." He got the point very quickly. He said, if that's what it takes, then I want you to wash my feet, my hands, and my head, because I want to be a part. I want you to be a part of me, and I want to be a part of you. Jesus said to them, "He that is washed needs not except to wash his feet." He said, "No, I'm not going to wash your hands and your head. I'm instituting a foot washing. This is what the purpose of this is for." And he said, "You don't need to wash except your feet, but you're clean everywhere, and you are all clean, but not all." For he knew who would betray him. Therefore, he said, "You are not all clean." So it says he already began to wash his disciples' feet. Now some have said, well, you know, Judas wasn't a part of the foot washing. He was there. And he said, not all of you are clean. Meaning Judas, who was sitting there with them, was not clean. John 13, verse 12, he says, "So after he had washed their feet, he had taken his garments and was set down again. And he said to them, 'Do you not know what I have done to you?'" Now he told Peter, "You're going to know, not soon after this, why I'm doing this." And here he says, "Do you know what I have done to you?" So he tells us the why it's a part of the service. He said, "You call me Lord and Master, and you say, 'Well, for so I am.' If I then, your Lord and Master, have washed your feet, so you ought to wash one another's feet." He said, "You're also to wash one another's feet." It wasn't just an institution or something that happened at that Passover service with Jesus Christ. He said, "You also ought to wash one another's feet." He gave them a commandment to do the same thing. And again, when I mentioned when we wash the feet of our brethren, we should have in our mind not that, okay, I don't want to picture whose feet I'm washing. I'm going to picture, you know, close my eyes and just picture that I'm washing the feet of Jesus Christ. We are all one body, one spirit, one Lord, one faith. Now, we should picture, yes, this is as if I was washing the feet of Jesus Christ, but it is also something that is humbling and connecting for us to be a part, to wash the feet of our brethren and to know exactly that, yes, I'm washing the feet of my brethren as well. So he commanded them to do the same thing. Verse 15, he said, "For I have given you an example." This word example in the Greek means an imitation or a pattern, "that you should do as I've done to you." He said, I want you to do this, and I want you to do it as a pattern. I want it to be something that you pass along, and you pass along the understanding of why I instituted it into that service. He said, "Verily, verily, I say to you, the servant is not greater than his Lord, neither is he that is sent greater than he that sent him. If you know these things, happy are you if you do them." And yet many people don't do them. Or many people would keep the foot washing and not really understand why they're doing it. We're to imitate Christ. We're to do it as he did. We're to put on Christ and to become more like him. Romans 13, 4 says, "We put on the Lord Jesus Christ and make not provisions for the flesh to fulfill the lust thereof." And to put on Christ, that word put on, as Barnes notes points out, it's an expression that means to imbibe in his principles, imitate his example, copy his spirit, and become like him. Exactly what he was telling us to do when he put in this foot washing service. "I had given you an example." He said, "I want you to be like me. I want you to put this spirit, this attitude, this character into your lives and to become something different." This is true in how we keep the Passover as well. 1 John chapter 2. 1 John chapter 2 and verse 5. "But whosoever keeps his word, in him verily is the love of God perfected. Hereby we know that we are in him. He that says he abides in him also himself walk even as he walked." The lessons of humility and service that we learn at the foot washing is to help us to learn to walk that way. To develop it as a frame of mind, not just at the Passover service, but something that we should have as a frame of mind all the time. Humility and service. I want to look at the example of foot washing that was done at a different time besides the Passover service. This is the woman who washed Christ's feet. It's a symbol of humility and service to Jesus Christ. It happened before he instituted this foot washing at the Passover. And foot washing was something that was done before, you know, when you're wearing sandals and crossing a desert, you come into a home. It was an example of a slave to wash the feet of an individual that had been on a journey. But to do it as a symbol of the Passover and the attitudes to learn was something different. Let's look at Luke chapter 7 and verse 36. Luke chapter 7 and verse 36. This wasn't done at the Passover service, but the attitude that we are to have was exemplified through this particular passage. It said, "One of the Pharisees desired him that he would eat with him. And when he came into the Pharisee's house, he sat down to meat. And behold, a woman in the city which was a sinner, when she knew that Jesus sat at meat at the Pharisee's house, brought an alabaster box of ointment, stood at his feet behind him, weeping." I point that out because when we see the story, we're going to understand there's more to it. And when we look at some of the words that are given to us, it gives us a better picture. "She stood at his feet behind him, weeping, and began to wash his feet with her tears, and wiped them with the hairs of her head, and kissed his feet, and she anointed them with the ointment." She didn't feel worthy to kneel before him or in front of him, and she came up behind him and began to wash his feet from behind. Verse 39, "Now when the Pharisee which had bidden him saw it, he spoke within himself," or he thought to himself, "saying, this man, if he were a prophet, would have known who and what manner of woman this is that touches him, for she is a sinner." Now, if we're examining ourselves, I don't think any of us could go to the Passover and say, "Well, I'm not a sinner." We go there saying, "I am a sinner and I need to be redeemed. I need to be forgiven." But he looked at her and said, "If, you know, he, If he knew, if he was truly a prophet, he would know she was a sinner. He thought he was better than others. He was exalting himself. Or he may have thought, well, she's not, you know, yes, I sin, but I'm better than that. She's a bigger sinner than I am. Will we approach the Passover thinking, I'm better than someone, or someone there is not as deserving as the Passover, of the Passover? Or are we going to approach it with an attitude that I don't have as much to repent of as other individuals? Some of you may have heard individuals state, and I have over the years, I don't know why that person was at the Passover service. I don't feel like they're converted. Well, that's not much different than what was written here. You know, if God recognized, he would probably know she was a sinner. Well, I think he would recognize every single one of us at the Passover service recognizes as having sinned. Verse 40, Jesus answered and said to him, Simon, I have somewhat to say to you. And he said, Master, say on. There was a certain creditor which had two debtors. The one owed 500 pence and the other 50. And when they had nothing to pay, he frankly forgave them both. Tell me, therefore, which one of them will love him most? Simon answered and said, I suppose that he to whom he had forgiven the most. And he said to him, you have rightly judged. He's probably going, well, yeah, because I'm better than even this woman here. I can judge wisely. And he turned to the woman and said to Simon, do you see this woman? I entered into your house, and you gave me no water for my feet. It was a normal thing to be given water so you could wash your feet to come into a home. He said, you gave me no water for my feet, but she has washed my feet with her tears and wiped them with the hairs of her head. She humbled herself to a greater degree than even just providing a basin and water by this individual. You gave me no kiss, but this woman, since the time I came, has not ceased to kiss my feet. My head with oil you did not anoint. He said, you didn't even anoint my head with oil. That was another typical thing. But this woman has anointed my feet with ointment. Not just oil, but a particular ointment. Putting oil on the feet, especially expensive oil, was very uncommon. Something that rarely happened. Clark commentary says, anointing the head with oil was common among the Jews as washing the face with water as is among us. To the Jews, they would come in, they'd anoint their head with oil. He says that, Clark commentary says, that's as common as us washing our face with water. Verse 47, wherefore I say to you, her sins which are many are forgiven, for she loved much. But to whom little is forgiven, the same loves little. Verse 48, he said to her, your sins are forgiven. She had the right approach. She humbled herself. She showed a commitment to him, but she showed a love for him as well. She humbled herself and began to wash his feet. It wasn't her dinner. She wasn't even a part of that dinner. But she came and humbled herself and realized who he was, and humbled herself to a great degree. Barnes' note says, my head with oil. The custom of pouring oil upon the head was universal among the Jews. The oil was used was sweet oil or oil from olives, prepared in such a way to give an agreeable smell. You wouldn't just dump pomace olive oil, if you've ever smelled pomace. There's different degrees. We say extra virgin olive oil is a great olive oil to use. That's first press, usually a cold press. Pomace is the last press when they press everything that's left to try to get anything out of it. It's gonna a darker oil, but you also get a lot more richer flavor. It's a good one to cook with, but you get a richer flavor because it's got all the pulp and all those extra things that come along with this oil. Now you can't imagine dumping that kind of oil on somebody's head and then, oh wow, now their head smells like olive oil. It smells like they've been cooking. But it said they would prepare it in a way to make a sweet oil and prepare it as in a way to give an agreeable smell. It was also used to render the hair more smooth and elegant. With ointment, this particular ointment was a mixture of various aromatics. and was therefore more costly and more precious than regular oil used to anoint the head. Her conduct, compared to that of Simon, was therefore more striking. He did not even give the common oil used for the head or used for such occasions. She had applied it to his feet, a far more precious and valuable act of service. He therefore showed comparatively little love, and she showed much love. When we do the foot washing at the Passover service, we show our love and commitment, not only to God, but to the brethren. And it's something that unifies brethren, and over the years, brethren realize it's an important part of it. It's something that brings us together. And again, those two key elements from the foot washing, humility and service, are something that we should carry on, not just at the service itself, but having that attitude towards one another all year long. What is real humility, and where do we go to find it? We look at the world, and the world puts on a false humility. They put on a show, or they do things, they serve others so they can be seen, or to get something for themselves. Many of you work in the workforce in various jobs or positions, and there's individuals who aren't even afraid to say, well, I do this because I know I'm going to get something back out of it. Where, why would I do that? There's nothing in it for me. This is a totally different attitude, and it's, again, something totally different way of thinking than most of us would even consider. But the world puts on this false humility. But God wants a humble and contrite attitude. He wants us to live a way of life, not just show a way of life. And Paul talks about that in Romans chapter 12, where he says, don't conform to the world, don't just pattern yourself after the world, but be transformed. But it's true in the church as well. We can't just conform to church or pattern ourselves after church, but not be changed by it. Not serve and have an attitude, that's great, but if we're not changing by it, we're just doing it as a service, a physical service, and not allowing it to change the heart. When he instituted this as an act of humility and an act of service, he wants that to be a part of our character. And true humility is a matter of the heart. It can't be faked very easily when it comes from the heart, because it will come out in every act a person does. You'll see it in various parts of their lives, not just when they're being seen. It's not so much what we do, but how we think and how it comes from the mind. Christ said in Matthew 11:28, he said, come to me, all you are who labor and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. He says, take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and you shall find rest for your souls. He says, my yoke is easy, my burden is light. But he says, I am meek and lowly in heart. Meek doesn't mean weak. It means, in the Strong's, according to the Greek word, gentle and humble. He said, I'm gentle and humble. And lowly in heart means humble or base. So he says, I'm gentle and humble, and I'm humble and base. He said, I'm gentle and humble in mind and thought. Have we examined ourselves to see if we're in the right attitude for the Passover? Not just a right attitude of, can I be accounted worthy to keep the Passover, which will never be worthy, but we can be in the right frame of mind. But do we look at ourselves to see if we're in the right attitude as far as service and humility to God, to the brethren, to one another? Are we gentle and humble in mind and thought? Two more ways to measure ourselves if we're examining ourselves before the Passover, to say, am I gentle and humble in my thinking and in my actions? What is the heart and what is in the heart will eventually come out, right or wrong. If you're doing it for wrong reasons, if you're serving and putting on a false humility, that becomes known over time. But when that becomes part of your character, and is something genuine, just as the woman washing the feet of Jesus Christ with her hair. He realized, there is a deep love that she's showing me, and you didn't even give me water, you didn't give me any ointment for my head, you didn't show love, and yet she's shown a great amount, because it was in her attitude and her approach. Philippians chapter 2 and verse 3. Philippians chapter 2 and verse 3. He says, let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem others better than themselves. This is humility. He said, let each esteem others better than themselves. How many problems could be solved if individuals looked at it and said, well, I'm going to esteem them better myself. I just want to take the high road. I don't want to offend anyone. I will esteem this person better than myself. He says in verse 4, look not every man on his own things, but every man also on the things of others. Service. It's interesting. It ties in very well with what David Johnson was bringing out in Accord about service and taking care of the widows, taking care of the elderly, taking care of the household of God. We are to care about others, and we are to care about them more than our own things, caring about the things of others. He says in verse 5, let this mind be in you, which was also in Jesus Christ. Okay, so now we see he's bringing across saying, I'm lowly in mind, I'm these things, and he says, I want you to have that mind in you. I want you to have the examples that are given and the lessons that are learned through foot washing as a part of your life, to live that example. And yet many find it hard to humble themselves, to put themselves in a position of serving or being served, even at the Passover service. I'm going to read a little story called Stubbornness. This is from an article, Closer Walk, December 1991. And they titled it Stubbornness. I think I would title it something different. It has the same premise as Pride. In the summer of 1986, two ships collided in the Black Sea off the coast of Russia. Hundreds of passengers died as they were hurled into the icy waters below. News of the disaster was further darkened when an investigation revealed the cause of the accident. You have two ships colliding, and, of course, besides the fact that the ships were destroyed, hundreds drowned. It wasn't a technology problem like radar malfunction or even thick fog. The cause was human stubbornness, pride. Each captain was aware of the other ship's presence nearby. Both could have steered clear, but according to news reports, neither captain wanted to give way to the other. Each was too proud to yield first. By the time they came to their senses, it was too late. That was from the article. I actually looked into this particular story. Found it in the New York Times. 398 people drowned. It was a liner and a freighter, and they knew for 45 minutes in advance that they were on a collision course for one another. 45 minutes. Neither captain wanted to move, and they had gone back on a radio call to one another, you need to yield, this is our path, and they said, no, you are in our path, you need to move. And they were so stubborn, they ran the ships into each other, and 398 people drowned. Sometimes we see that type of attitude even among God's people, where someone will be so stubborn, or two individuals would be so stubborn about an issue, about a problem, that they say, I'm not going to be the first one to say I'm sorry, or I'm not going to be the first one to esteem another better than myself. I'm going to hold my ground. And you see some individuals almost like the Hatfields and McCoys. Those who are older understand what that is. I don't think our younger people would understand Hatfields and McCoys. Two groups of individuals who fought against each other, two families, for years and years, and it was it's in books and stories. But Hatfields and McCoys, people who just fought against each other and grew up and from generation to generation fought against each other. But an attitude of not giving in and not being the first one to esteem the other better than themselves. Again, sometimes even I think within the church we can see that type of attitude arise. The individuals who don't want to give up their pride. I don't want to be the first one to say this because then I lose. Well, fine, you lose. You've restored a relationship. Be the one willing to make that change. God tells us in 1 Peter 5:5, we're supposed to be clothed with humility. Let's go to 1 Peter. 1 Peter chapter 5 and in verse 5. Likewise, you younger, submit yourselves to your old elders. Yes, all of you, be subject to one another and be clothed with humility. For God resists the proud and gives grace to the humble. We're not only supposed to have humility as an example or a pattern that we follow, but he says we're supposed to be clothed with it. Verse 6, humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time. What does it mean to be clothed with humility? Strong says this word, to gird or to clothe, is to engirdle oneself. That is, figuratively, put on the apron being a badge of servitude. Or being clothed with humility as a badge of servitude. To wear something as a token or to be clothed with. Humility is something of the mind and the heart. It says here is something that we wear. To be clothed with something, even in a spiritual sense, is something that's going to be visible to others. And as it says, it is a badge of servitude. When an individual who is committed to service, individuals see that and they're going, yes, this individual serves, this individual is dedicated to serving, this individual helps others and would always be known as somebody that helps others. It's a badge of servitude. And a humble attitude and a serving attitude will stand out as a character trait that other individuals will see. It's a fruit of God's Spirit, meekness or humility, something that we produce, especially when we're attached to the vine. When we are connected with Jesus Christ and allowing him to live in us and through us, it's going to be something that is visible. It's one of those things that we can measure ourselves and examine ourselves with. Am I humble? Most of the time we look at fruits of the works of the flesh, fruits of the Spirit, attitudes we should have, attitudes we shouldn't have. Humility and service are two areas that we also need to measure ourselves with. A badge of servitude. Christ showed humility through the acts of service to his disciples, not just in the foot washing, but in other things. But he said particularly that was a lesson that he wanted them to learn and to follow that pattern or example that he was given to them on the evening of Passover. A person who is truly humble and concerned about others will serve others. What is our attitude towards service? Do we serve to be served? Over 46 years in the church now. I have seen individuals who served to be served. Because after sometimes decades, they say, I've been serving the church for years and nobody served me or nobody's done anything for me. And you think, well, is that the reason why you were doing it? Some have served to be served. Some serve to be recognized. Now, many of us have probably seen that. Individuals who serve and they go, I've been serving here. I should be ordained. I should be given a position of leadership. I should be given great responsibility because I've served. Some serve to hear the praises of men. They like to be told, wow, he's such a servant, or you do so much for the church. And if they're doing it for those reasons, Christ even talked about that and said, you have your reward. And you've been patted on the back. You got what you were looking for. Some serve for position, to obtain position. But again, Those things are revealed over time, and they are wrong. Some serve because that's what they were called to do and what they're supposed to do, and because the service was not something just that they did, but they now had that as a part of their actions. It was from the heart and is from the heart. And they serve and they have a true humility that comes from the heart. They develop that as a frame of mind and don't worry about, well, what are others going to think about the way I serve? Or are others going to recognize me as I serve? They don't think about those things. Service is good, but there's also right and wrong motives for that service. The writers of the New Testament referred to themselves as bondservants, slaves, just as Jesus Christ said he came in the form of a doulos, or a bondservant, a slave. And as they served the people of God, as those began to be called and converted, they called themselves bondservants, or slaves, for the brethren. Bondservants of the Lord Jesus Christ. Let's go to 2 Corinthians chapter 4. 2 Corinthians chapter 4. And in verse 5. For we preach not ourselves, but Jesus Christ the Lord, and ourselves your servants for Jesus' sake. He said, we ourselves are your servants. The word servants there is doulos. We're bond slaves. He said, we are your bond servants. We're your slaves for Jesus' sake. He said, we're carrying on the work and doing this for him, but we are your servants. We are called to become servants, and again, we're going to be doing that for the millennium. We're going to be doing that through the great white throne judgment, serving people. And serving others. And it's an attitude we have to develop. What kind of servant is God the Father and Jesus Christ looking for? What kind of attitude is it if it's more than just serving, more than just committing ourselves to an event or an activity, more than just preparing for Sabbath services? What type of servant and what type of individual are God the Father and Jesus Christ looking for? And it's one who is bought and paid for, one who is totally committed to that way of life. When we make that covenant, we realize at baptism we have been bought and paid for. We realize our life is no longer our own, excuse me, but our lives belong to God the Father and Jesus Christ. Let's go to 1 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 19. 1 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 19. He says, what, know you not that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit which is in you, and which you have of God? You are not your own. God the Father and Jesus Christ are looking for individuals who realize, I'm not my own anymore. I don't make the choices of what's going to please me or help me. I'm now a bondservant. I've been bought and paid for. I am a bondservant. I am a slave, as we talk about in Romans, and Paul talks about being a slave of righteousness. We are a slave of righteousness. We are a slave of Jesus Christ, and we are bought and paid for. And again, we realize our lives are not our own, but we belong to God the Father, Jesus Christ. So he says here, you are not your own, for you are bought with a price. Therefore, glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's. A bondservant lives his life for the good of his master. He's dedicated to serving. And we have given ourselves to be used by God. But yet some hang on to that old way of life, don't we? Individuals who don't want to submit to another individual. Now what we read earlier, he said submitting one to another. And in various times and places, and as we go through time, we learn to submit to one another in various circumstances. But he tells us that we're bought with a price, therefore glorify God in your body and in your spirit. Bondservants of Jesus Christ. When we kneel at the Passover and take the foot of one of our brethren and begin to wash their feet, are we doing it wholeheartedly? Are we doing it with this attitude that, as Christ said, if you don't wash my feet, or if you don't do this to one another, I don't have a part in you? Or are we doing it as a duty? As, well, I'm glad it's only one time a year that I have to wash someone's feet. I'm going to get this over with as quickly as I can and move on. Are we doing it wholeheartedly? Over the years, I have seen individuals line up in a way that they can, well, where are those who are ordained, especially when you had 200 or 300 people, and they watch where the ministry is, watch where the deacons and elders are, and they hold back and they get in line, so I want to be with the leadership. I want to go through with the leadership, and the leadership's trying to move in and just get in wherever, and so you see people kind of moving in and out and following, where can I get in to wash the feet of someone ordained? Again, sometimes we see individuals waiting to wash the feet just so they can be with someone in particular. Or they find somebody very quickly and say, here, I'll wash your feet, because I didn't want to have to wash the feet of someone else that I don't know well or that I'm not comfortable with. It should be at the point where it doesn't matter who there that particular evening were washing their feet. It doesn't matter whose feet you wash, because you're washing the feet of the body of Jesus Christ. Washing the feet of one another, and should be willing to wash the feet of anyone who is there. It doesn't matter whose feet you wash. When you wash the feet of any member, again, we should be doing it as though we were washing the feet of Jesus Christ. Being willing to. If Jesus Christ were here, I think any of us would be willing, yes, if you need somebody to wash your feet, I would wash your feet. Will we do that with one another? Galatians 5:13 says, brethren, you have been called unto liberty or freedom from sin. Only don't use that freedom for an occasion for the flesh, but by love serve one another. For all the law is fulfilled in one word, even this, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. So Paul says, by love serve one another. Let's go to Ephesians chapter 6. And verse 5. Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 5. He says, servants, be obedient to them that are your masters, according to the flesh, with fear and trembling, in singleness of heart as unto Christ. He says, be obedient to your masters as unto Christ. He says, not with eye service. It's interesting, this word, the definition of this word is sight labor. He says, not with sight labor, not doing things within eye shot so people can see, or serving only when people are watching. When I graduated Ambassador College, I worked in a factory for about 6 months before going into sales full-time. And I worked at this particular warehouse, and whenever you worked hard, they would move you over to a different location of the warehouse. And I ended up getting moved over to this particular part of the warehouse for a couple of weeks because there was a certain job that needed to be done. And so they moved me and one other individual, and they said, we want you to go over this part of the warehouse, and here's what we want you to do. Well, we went over there, and this coworker climbed up on the boxes and laid down. He said, I'm going to be taking a nap for about an hour. He said, I've come to this area several times before. And he said, nobody ever comes to this part of the warehouse. And he said, you can sleep over here and nobody even knows. He said, you don't have to work. He said, I'm taking a nap. I'm going to be up in about an hour. He said, nobody is watching and nobody is around. men pleasers, as he says, not as men pleasers, but as servants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart. See, we don't do things just because somebody's watching. Hopefully we don't wash someone's feet going, well, they're watching next to me, so I got to wash the feet really good. Hopefully you wash the feet really good anyway. Or as the rule says, at least touch the feet. We don't want to just splash feet. Take that and show love and service through the foot washing. Again, not just being men pleasers or doing things as sight labor. Verse 7, it says, with goodwill, doing service as to the Lord. Do it as if you were doing it for or to Christ and not to men. Knowing that whatsoever good thing any man does, the same shall receive of the Lord, whether he's bond or free. True service, just as humility, is from the heart. Both of them are matters of the heart. As we partake of the Passover service, as we participate in this particular service, there is a special meaning and a special understanding that we gain from this foot washing. It provides humility on both sides. Again, to have someone wash your feet, it may be just as humbling as you washing the feet of another. An attitude of service, doing it as if we were doing it as to the Lord. It forms a bond with the brethren. And it also shows a deep submission to Jesus Christ. And it shows that we have been bought with a price. We are humbling ourselves in that way. But we desire to be that servant. Let's make sure as we examine ourselves and prepare for the Passover that we're also thinking about the foot washing, the attitude and the state of mind that we need to have before we take the symbols of the bread and the wine, before we come to Passover service, not just having it for foot washing itself, making sure that that's part of our character. The foot washing is a service to the brethren, but also shows a commitment to a life of humility and service to God the Father and to Jesus Christ.